Greetings. Greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, and we will not be offered a job in the Trump administration and leave the airwaves anytime soon. Don't worry about any of that. So we are here to the Weekly Worldview, where we do our best to help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. Almost lost my train of thought there. So I was speaking with a friend recently who fled the state of Colorado for the state of Texas. Why? Because he's convinced that Colorado is the epicenter of Babylon times Sodom divided by Bashan and whatever. Just, yeah. It's run by a criminally insane gang of perverts. Not unlike a number of states, and so finally drove him to the point where he fled to Texas. And so I've been talking him through that because Texas can be kind of hard to take. For people who haven't been there, imagine landing on the surface of the moon and then being told you're going to live here. So Texas can be a bit hard on the uninitiated. So we've been helping with that. And in doing so, my mind has been on Texas because I grew up in Texas. I grew up out in West Texas. And so I have, in a pinch, I can speak Texan. And I hope that if the Republic falls, that they will let me in if I have to flee back into Texas so I can speak some Texan at the border. I'm sure there'll be a secret word to get in. And I'm hoping I can remember. I think it'll be all of y'all. How many of y'all want to come in? All of y'all. Oh, okay. Come on in. So, anyway, in fact, this is from the Allah Y'all file. The Allah Y'all file from the Rare Foundation, R-A-I-R Foundation, which stands for Reignite, Aspirate, Incinerate, and Rise, something like that. We'll get to these folks in just a second. But first, the headline: Islamic indoctrination in Texas. And so I saw that headline and I had to stop and click because what? Islamic indoctrination in Texas? I can't imagine it because I grew up there, and the one thing you never thought would happen in Texas would be Islamic indoctrination, at least me. But here in the Allah Y'all file, we find a story about EPIC. What's EPIC? The East Plano Islamic Center. That's right. EPIC is a radical Islamic stronghold indoctrinating Muslim children to hate America and Israel, and it's ensconced right in East Plano, Texas, that's the Dallas metropolitan area. Not only that, it's the North Dallas. It's the nice part of Dallas. And there's a mosque in the center of it. So you got like the nice part of the suburbs of Dallas, if there could be such a thing. I mean, I couldn't live there. But if you did, you would think it was nice. And then in the middle of it is a little chunk of Baghdad or Mecca. Like right in the middle is this giant mosque facility complex in Plano, Texas. Okay, and what's going on there is youth indoctrination, an aggressive anti-Israel and anti-American narrative is being delivered to the kiddos there in Plano under the guise of children's stories. The Islamists are lecturing the children against Israel, against America. There's one lecture titled Palestine Occupation Explained for Kids, with a big smiley face and a cloud, and then you can click here to register. Opt out? Well, you can opt out for now, but we'll see how long that lasts. But there are no, they're not tranny story hour. What is the story hour? It's the drag queen. There's no drag queens at these story hours. So that's one thing you don't have to worry about. And parental consent is not required also. And so that's the Palestine Occupation Explained for Kids Story Hour going on in Plano. According to Rare, Epic is the epicenter. Epic, by the way. That's good marketing on the part of the Islamic fanatics who want to destroy civilization and take us back 1,000 years before the Dark Ages even. Well, in the Dark Ages. Worse than the Dark Ages, because the Dark Ages weren't so bad until the Muslims started chopping everyone's head off. That really accelerated the whole dark part of the Dark Ages. Epic, that is the East Plano Islamic Center, is the epicenter of a strategic and coordinated effort to Islamize Texas. Islamize Texas. That's right. Their intent is to build a network. Not their intent. They're doing it. They have done it, and they will continue to build a network of Islamic enclaves that seek to operate outside the framework of U.S. law. It's all designed to reshape Texas through Islamic influence. Okay, and so if any one of you have ever been to Texas, the one thing you'll know about Texas is people who live in Texas love the shape of Texas. They love it. They make ashtrays out of it. They make clocks out of it. You name it, you can get it shaped like Texas if you are in Texas. But the Islamists, they intend to reshape Texas through Islamic influence.
That ain't happening.
So I know, and you'd think there ain't no way that's happening. That's Texan, by the way. There ain't no way that's happening, is what a Texan was. Well, it's happening. Now, where I grew up in a town of less than 3,000 people. There might be 3,000 people in the little town I grew up in on homecoming night during the football game. And then after the football game, the population dropped dramatically. But there were at least a dozen churches. At least you couldn't swing a dead cat without hitting a church in a little town that I grew up in. Most of them were Methodist or some form of group that splintered off from the Methodists. And maybe for financial reasons, they joined the Baptists or the Church of Christ or whatever. But they were all pretty much the same. They were all pretty much the same flavor of Texas Christianity, which was, we know where God belongs, and that's after football. And then there was a few other things, country music and pistols and rifles, horses, pickup trucks, and then God was in there somewhere. But they knew where God fit, and they kept him there. And so now it appears, having done that for so long, the Methodists and all in Texas, it seems the Methodists have lost Texas. Well, we know the Methodists lost Texas to the heathens before I even moved down there in the late 1970s. By the time I got there, the heathens had already wrested Texas away from the Methodists. And so now the heathens, they're going to lose it to the Muslims. The Muslims are going to come in. They're just going to clean it up and square things away. And they're going to run the place, quite possibly, in Texas. Now you think, no, Doug, that's the Rare Foundation. They're extremists. Well, I have another report from them about Nihad Awad, the founding member and current president of the Council on American Islamic Relations. This is a very prominent group. Well, I mean, it was very prominent under Barack Obama. And if Joe Biden had known what was going on and had time, he would have been, if Joe Biden wasn't so busy stealing money, he would have been selling us out to care. And he might have been, and they kept it really quiet. That could be. Barack Obama learned, by the time I get to the third administration, I got to keep quiet on the Islamic thing. Let's get Joe up there. He'll distract them, right? With all the graft and crime. Council on American Islamic Relations, that's CARE. And this is reported to by the Rare Foundation, oddly enough. The CAIR, the president, Nihad Awad, delivered a chilling speech at the Islamic Society of North America meeting at the conference about a month ago. He laid out his vision and the society's vision for the future of America. They have a long-term strategy to entrench Islamic influence in American institutions, politics, and media. That's right. That's the Islamic Society of North America, and their founding mission was to advance the cause of Islam and serve Muslims in North America to adopt Islam as a complete way of life. Complete is the operative term. He laid out his plan, 4,000 mosques, which we already have. That's scary. He said the 4,000 mosques nationwide should establish funds for 5 annual scholarships, journalism, law, filmmaking, political science, and history. If every mosque followed through, by 2029, there'd be 4,000 new Muslim attorneys, Muslim journalists, Muslim filmmakers, political scientists, and historians. And within 15 years, he projected this number would grow to 50,000 Muslim attorneys, journalists, filmmakers, 50,000 political influencers. That basically he's calling on the Islamic community to put a pipeline of intellectual Muslim muscle to begin reshaping America. And now he just said this at the Islamic Society of North America meeting just about a month ago, but this has been in force for easily 20 years. This has been going on already. It's now accelerating and it's amplifying. And he laid out the numbers, 50,000. And I haven't run the math, but I know that Arabs are good at math. And so I'm guessing Nihad Awad from the All About Islam file here, I'm sure that Nihad is good at math. And now Westerners, so we're good at literature. And it seems there's coming a significant clash between the two. And there has been in the past, by the way, for all you kiddos who just woke up, there's been a significant conflagration in the past between Islam and the West, the Christian West. It's happened before when the Christian West went soft, weak, and stupid and ungodly. Not necessarily in that order, ungodly coming first. And it seems that history is on the verge of repeating itself. And only Jesus Christ can reconcile these two unstoppable forces. Well, I shouldn't say. Yeah, they are two unstoppable. You've got Satan against Jesus Christ, and Jesus is unstoppable, and Satan will not stop unless he's smashed down. And only Jesus can reconcile these two civilizations that are coming into conflict to avoid the bloodbath that's coming. And it's already happening in Syria. So everybody's celebrating. I shouldn't say everybody. To all the communists and leftists and all the people who were atop the pile of the criminally insane sex cult that seized the government in 2012, they're all celebrating that Hafez al-Assad, I'm sorry, not Hafez, I can't remember the kid's name, the son's name, Bashar Assad. They're all happy that he was driven from power, run out of town, sent fleeing into Russia. Breitbart reports Syrian president, but Syrian president Ahmad al-Sharaa. Okay, listen, Breitbart journalists. Just because a mad Islamic fundamentalist, insane, murderous dictator calls himself the president doesn't mean you have to. I know you all went to journalism school, but please. Okay, Ahmad al-Sharaa. He signed into law an Islamist temporary constitution. It's just temporary. While we rebuild from the civil war. Uh-huh. Yeah, he declared Islamic law the main source of litigation, asserting that this jurisprudence, meaning Islamic jurisprudence, is the true treasure that should not be squandered. It gives, by the way, the new constitution has three separate governmental power, executive, legislative, judicial. This guy's like Thomas Jefferson, except that the Constitution gives Sharaa absolute power to choose who serves. Up until a point where it can completely hold elections. Anyway, so Mr. Sharaa, you might want, I hope you have a plane ticket and a bag, because as soon as Vladimir Putin gets the Ukraine situation calmed down just a little bit, he's going to conquer Syria in less than a month, and he's either going to blow your brains out or send you packing for London. View, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. That's right. My prediction is that Vladimir Putin will reinstall Bashar al-Assad, the rat-faced boy, and right soon too, I do believe. So the Islamists, by the way, with their Islamic constitution, ISIS and Al-Qaeda have taken over Syria, and they're slaughtering Christians. Which it's very suspicious. I want to say it's almost looks like a criminal or it almost looks like not just a criminal act, but it almost looks intentional on the part of the Western democracies to topple Arab governments and Middle Eastern governments and allow Islamists to take power so they can murder Christians. It almost looks intentional. Ever since the so-called Arab Spring under Barack Hussein Obama. It just almost looks right around the same time they started the war in Ukraine to keep Russia busy. Anyway, it just all seems rather deliberate. Call me suspicious. Call me a conspiracy theorist. Meanwhile, let's return to America with the criminal insanity file, which gets thicker by the day. The Trump administration is considering changes to the National Suicide Hotline's special service for LGBTQ identifying youth. So how do you know Donald Trump's not a conservative? Because he hasn't denounced the fact that America has a suicide hotline, a national suicide hotline catering to LGBTQ identifying youth. The fact that this wasn't eliminated on day one proves to you that Donald Trump is no conservative. This so-called hotline routes young callers to organizations that specialize in affirming counseling. The hotline has received over a million contacts since... Contacts? Man, I wouldn't use that. That's kind of gross. When you're talking about LGBT identifying people being routed to affirming counselors. Anyway, that's just since the hotline was launched in 2022. The hotline placed access to transgender activists at children's fingertips, courtesy of the federal government. Department of Health and Human Services. And this is what happens when you substitute a Department for Health and Human Services for actual health and humanity, because there's no such thing as human services. I don't even know what that could be. What is a human service? Okay. All right. Nobody asked that when they founded this thing. Like, wait a second. What exactly is a human service? How are we supposed to go about that? We don't even know what that means.
Jesus did it. He did this human
service. That's right. There was only one human service. Jesus Christ provided the only human service that anybody ever needs. And these guys are ripping him off. And basically, yeah, that's it. They put themselves in the place of God. We'll take care of your health and your human services. All right. And so it ends up being run by, it ends up being a giant bureaucratic slush fund run by a pile of faggots. We're being robbed by a pile of faggots who are then molesting our children. It's no wonder the Muslims are lining up to take Texas. This is embarrassing. But don't worry, the MAGA crowd is on. Elon Musk is on the scene, and he's got enough ketamine to stay awake and get it taken care of. HHS is reviewing the LGBTQ identifying suicide hotline. We have a quote from an HHS spokesperson. Say, hey, there's another sign Donald Trump is no conservative. He hasn't got rid of the term spokesperson. A real man would say, we're going to call them spokesmen. Doesn't matter if they're a man or a woman. And in fact, we're going to make them all men. Then you'd know you had a conservative in the White House. But we have an HHS spokesperson who told the Daily Caller News Foundation, quote, we are working to ensure that HHS better serves the American people at the highest and most efficient standards as it relates to those experiencing a suicidal crisis or emotional distress, unquote. That is an unnamed, unfaceless, nameless bureaucrat at the Department of Health and Human Services. And this is another sign that the Make America Great crowd doesn't really understand that nobody in the federal government is responsible, obligated, or even has any authority in the area of people experiencing suicidal crises and emotional distress. That's for families, maybe a pastor, but yeah, not a bureaucrat, not someone engaged collecting $130,000 a year at the federal government at the Department of Health and Human Services. I'm sorry. So the fact that the Trump administration still has an HHS spokesperson, that's very depressing. I would have thought they would have fired all of them and started dismantling that. There should already be bulldozers at whatever building HHS occupies. There should already be bulldozers lined up there. Instead, we have press releases of the same leftist socialist drivel that we could have expected from an Obama administration appointee 10 years ago. So I don't want to put too fine a point on it. And all right, so I know I'm beating up on the Trump administration. Hold on now, I want to give him some credit. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who you know, I disagree with appointing Robert F. Kennedy Jr. to anything because he's a baby killer. So he's not qualified to be in the government. But that doesn't mean he can't make a right decision and that I can agree with him on that decision while pointing out that he's a baby killer. And instead of being in the government, he should be arrested. I want to preface my statement with that. This is from the Craven Politics file. RFK Jr. is warning against vaccinating chickens against the bird flu. And I know people say, well, RFK, he warns against vaccinating anybody for anything. So, and that might be true. But you got to hear me out on this because I've been saying for the better part of, 2 years? How long has this been going on with this bird flu? It's been going on for quite a while. I think a couple of years. I've been saying, number one, stop panicking. Number two, stop killing all the chickens. And number three, let cooler heads prevail, for crying out loud. Well, RFK comes in and he warns, he says, if you start vaccinating chickens with a leaky vaccine, meaning a vaccine that does not provide sterilizing immunity, then you turn those flocks into mutation factories and they'll produce a flu virus that's resistant and and he's right. Well, he's almost right. So what is a leaky vaccine? Well, how about the COVID vaccine? It doesn't prevent transmission or infection, but it does involve a shot in the arm. So now that's the definition of a vaccine. See, it used to be a vaccine prevented you from catching the disease. That's called sterilizing immunity. Prevented you from catching the disease and then enabled your immune system to basically build us a relatively permanent or at least significant defense against the disease. That was a vaccine. No longer. Now a vaccine is if we inject it in your arm and you put on the mask, you had a vaccine. That's good. You're a good person. And now we want to do it to the chickens, except for the masks, because that would take too much work. Because chickens aren't like people. They wouldn't comply. But the HHS, what is RFK in charge of? I can't remember. He's in charge of some bureaucracy where there should be bulldozers in front of the building already, and he's in charge of it. Whatever one it is, I can't remember. It might be HHS, it might be CDC, it might be FDA, it might be CIA, it might be LSD, it might be LSMFT. I don't know. But he says if you vaccinate with a leaky vaccine, an ineffective vaccine, similar to the COVID vaccine, which are what the big pharma companies are selling, are ineffective vaccines. Why? Because there's billions of dollars in it. And the government will go for it. All the drug salesmen got to be like, this is unbelievable. We made something that doesn't work, and the government wants to buy all of it all day long. They can't believe their luck. But he says, if you do this, you're going to turn the flocks into mutation factories. This is because RFK does not understand the immune system and the extraordinary sophistication that the creator God built into the immune system, even of a virus. So the viruses don't mutate. Well, they do mutate. But what the viruses are doing is they're adapting. The viruses want to live. Just like everything wants to live, everything wants to exist, everything is programmed by God to live, including the viruses. So if you hit the virus with things designed to kill it, well, some of them are going to adapt, and then they're going to not die, and then they're going to reproduce, and that's how you get... It's not a mutation. RFK, he's a Catholic, and he doesn't even understand that God created a sophisticated method and ability to adapt into all living things, into the genetics of all living things. But RFK is an old earth evolutionist, baby-killing lowlife. Who thinks that the vaccines are just mutating, and if we allow them to mutate enough, well, it's evolution, and we could do a million years worth of mutations in just a few weeks with this leaky vaccine, instead of understanding that he's right, but he's fallen backwards accidentally into being right, because he doesn't understand that the more we attack the virus in an ineffective way, the more it adapts. And then also that, RFK goes on, most of our scientists are against culling. It's not culling. How, see, these people buy into the lexicon of the adversary, and that's how we'll never win. Appointing baby killers like this, old earth, evolutionist, baby-killing lowlifes like RFK, we're not going to win. He speaks their language. They're not culling the chickens, Bobby. They're slaughtering and mass slaughter of the chickens. Culling is different. And it used to have a definition similar to vaccine. Used to have a definition we all agreed on. But now culling means killing every chicken on a farm. That's not culling. Okay. But RFK says we shouldn't be slaughtering all the chickens. He says most of our scientists up at the department of whatever bureaucracy I run, they say we should be testing therapeutics on those flocks and identify the birds that survive, which are the birds that probably have a genetic inclination to immunity. Bobby doesn't understand that they've adapted. Certain chickens are going to adapt to the bird flu. They're going to beat it, and then they're going to pass that on to their kids. God designed it that way. It's only been going on for 5,000 years, Bobby. You haven't figured it out yet. We used to all know all this.
Or the farmer knows this.
Yeah, the farmers all know. That's why they're like, please don't slaughter all my chickens. And the government said, bend your knee. Well, no, the government paid them off. I'm sure most of these chicken farms. Listen to this. The Trump administration has now unveiled a plan to combat the bird flu, which the federal government has no business combating the bird flu. Bunch of bureaucratic idiots. Donald Trump built buildings in Manhattan. He doesn't know squat about the bird flu. All right. Anyway, they've unveiled that it's $500 million to bolster biosecurity measures out of the farm, whatever that means. Just building a fence around the farm to keep the flu out. So I don't know what it means. Redirecting the solar energy. There's nothing you can do to... All right. Biosecurity measures. We're going to protect you against an airborne avian flu virus. It's just unbelievable. Oh, that's $500 million. Then $400 million in aid for farmers. Whatever that means, don't ask. You don't want to know, trust me. And then another $100 million to research and potentially develop vaccines and therapeutics. That means the drug companies and the public health officials, the maniacal public health officials who destroyed civilization in an epic freak out into Dark Ages level superstition, they're all still there. And Trump's still listening to them. Remember he listened to them the first time? Huh? We haven't forgotten about that. Don't you either. It's the Weekly Worldview. And I am your host, Doug McBurney. That's right. Donald Trump, I mean, God bless him. I pray for him. He's the president. I respect the office. I don't want to speak evil of a dignitary, but he's just another flavor. No, not but. This isn't speaking evil. I'm not going to insult him personally. I'm going to try to help him. Don, you're just another flavor of ill-informed socialist. Don't you understand that if a farmer fails, let's say all his chickens actually die from the actual bird flu. Let's say the CDC Gestapo doesn't come in and slaughter all of his chickens, but he loses his entire flock. He goes bankrupt. He has to sell the farm. Let's say that happens. Well, Don, it's not like he's dead. It's not like his farm, like the land is vaporized and it no longer exists. It's not like he can't go bankrupt and his farm can't be taken over by someone else. And he gets it. What's that?
He shouldn't know about bankruptcy.
Yeah, Don, you should know all about bankruptcy. You should know better, right? For crying out loud. And by the way, I don't mean bankruptcy in the traditional sense of America's corrupt bankruptcy laws. I mean actually going broke and losing everything, which has happened to billions of people billions of times over the past 5,000 years. People go broke and lose everything. And then what do? They sell whatever they got. They take whatever pennies they can scrape together. They get into another line of work. And so the farmer, his farm collapses. He loses everything. Oh, it's a tragedy. I'm sure I wouldn't want to go through it, right? I wouldn't want to lose everything, but it happens. And I feel sorry for the guy. If he's a friend of mine, I might try to help him out. But he gets into another line of work. And he might even end up being more successful than he was with his farm. He's not going to die in a gutter, in a ditch. You know, the socialist left has conditioned Americans to believe that losing your job is akin to the death penalty. They've eliminated the actual death penalty and taught all the children that losing your job is akin to the death penalty. But it's not. Losing your job is a bummer. It's a drag. It hurts. But it's not the end of the world. And the government has no authority or ability, by the way, to guarantee outcomes and that you won't lose your job or you won't lose your farm. The government can't do that. Well, they can't do it without robbing people and raiding the treasury. And then if you do that and you promise people that you can guarantee their economic outcome, if you do that long enough, eventually you've robbed everyone blind and you've raided the treasury to the tune of umpteen trillions of dollars in debt. And the country hovers on the verge of a massive economic crisis, which is where we find ourselves, having bought into these bogus promises of these communists that they can guarantee. All right, let's move on. I don't want to beat a dead horse on that. Oh, so real quick, report here from the America First report. Neither Canada nor Mexico have killed a single chicken in the avian flu pandemic crisis.
Not even Canada.
No, they haven't. Yeah, right. Is that not embarrassing that the Canadians haven't fallen for this, for crying out loud? That's right. They haven't instituted any of the mass slaughter policies that we have. And so the folks at America First wonder, why is it that this bird flu crisis doesn't seem to be able to cross the border? We don't even have a wall. And Mexico and Canada have not followed suit. And hence, their eggs are affordable. In fact, people are smuggling eggs into... In fact, Donald Trump is now buying eggs from Mexico and Canada. Anyway, there are conspiracy theories whirling about why did the government decide to do all this chicken slaughtering. And according to NBC News, let's see here, Andrew Bowman, who is their influenza expert at NBC News. So, and that's sad, because when there is a genuine public health crisis, I would want to hear from an expert who could tell me what to do. I want that. That's a beneficial thing. It saves lives. But now, whenever anyone hears public health or flu expert or virus, we all laugh. And we assume that they're in the tank for either the criminally insane pervert club that runs the criminally insane government, or for the drug companies who bilked everybody for a vaccine that didn't work. We don't trust these people. Andrew Bowman, I can't believe he's not on a corner with a tin cup in his hand. Sign around his neck. Will expert for food. Andrew Bowman says, he's from the Ohio State University, College of Veterinary Medicine there. Very prestigious, although they don't have an accent like that in Ohio. They're more like the University College of Veterinary Medicine. Right there in Ohio, Columbus even. So Bowman, the influenza expert, says, quote, I really hate saying unprecedented, referring to the current bird flu outbreak, but it sure feels different than anything before, unquote. I mean, unless you cross the border to Mexico and Canada, where they're treating it like everything else ever before. Going back several thousand years, because we do have some experience with that. But according to the NBC News expert, it's unprecedented, doesn't feel like anything else before. Be afraid. Be prepared. We may have to institute measures to flatten the curve at any moment. So, all right. What are the odds we're going to fall for that one again? I think they're pretty thin. I don't think they can pull that off. I think they've been dabbling with the trigger, with their trigger finger, for the better part of 3 years, and I think it's pretty obvious that no, we're not going to buy that again. Which, I don't know. It's like the devil you know is worse than the devil you don't. So what do they have for us? What are the maniacal cabal of insane socialist billionaires who we now know have been robbing us blind and fueling the destruction of our civilization? What do they have in mind next, and can they pull it off? So, okay, well, listen to how strange things have gotten. From the politics file, Donald Trump bought a Tesla Model S in front of God and everybody. Uh-huh, he did it on the White House lawn. He wrote Elon Musk a check for a car that there's no way Donald Trump would ever actually buy that car. I mean, when you saw Donald Trump get in and out of that car, it was obvious this was all staged, because there's no way that could ever actually happen. Now, Donald did say, I know that Elon would give me a discount, but honestly, I don't want to ask for a discount. You know, I'm president, and so I want to pay the full price. And he paid Elon the full price, which is astonishing, by the way. I hadn't looked into the full price of a Tesla, but it was so. By the way, after Donald Trump stroked out the check for the Tesla there on the White House lawn. By the way, I do want to state that here at the Weekly Worldview, we are against firebombing Tesla dealerships. We are against defacing Tesla vehicles. We are against setting Tesla charging stations on fire. We think anyone who does any of those things should be punished appropriately. If you set a Tesla station on fire, you should be put to death if you're convicted. If you firebomb a Tesla dealership, if you're convicted, you should be executed. If you deface a Tesla vehicle by scratching a swastika into it, you should have a swastika whipped into your backside with a whip. So I just want to make clear where we stand on this, because you all know I'm not a fan of Elon Musk. I'm not a fan of the Tesla car or any of that. But anyway, Donald Trump says he bought the car out of genuine serious. I love this car. He loves it. But he's not allowed to drive it, he said, because, you know, the rules and Secret Service and security measures, I'm not going to be allowed to actually drive the car, he says. So he's going to loan it to the girls on his staff.
That's why he bought it.
That's why he bought it, to loan it to. Well, no, we all know why he's not going to drive it. Yeah. Because he doesn't want to look like one of those people duped into buying a battery-powered Corolla for $100,000. That's why. That's why. He doesn't want to have to call his mom and tell her he's gay. That joke didn't go over very well, for crying out. Boy. So I was thinking, do I have to explain that joke? That's not a very good one. Okay, all right. No, I see. Now we go from there. To the Craven Politics File. You know, I get my news from right-wing conservative news aggregating websites. I got a bunch of them I go to. I'm sure I've mentioned them. I'm not going to mention them. But here was two headlines that this is the typical MAGA aggregator listing these days. If you go to, not the Drudge Report, because he went total communist, whatever's up with Matt Drudge. I called it. Back before COVID actually broke, I said, Matt Drudge needs to be arrested. That was when whatever happened, it turned. I don't know if he was possessed by Satan himself or if Soros bought him off. I really don't know what happened to Matt Drudge, but haven't checked the Drudge Report in many years. But I go to the Rantingly. I go to the Liberty Daily. I go to Breitbart. I go to Citizen Free Press. Is there anyone else? I go to Rare, and I go to these, right? Anyway, so here's the aggregator headlines. Senate overwhelmingly passes fentanyl trafficking bill. And then right below that, these 16 Democrats just voted against cracking down on fentanyl. That's just typical of the daily grist from the MAGA, the MAGA news aggregators. Senate passes fentanyl tracking bill. Democrats vote against. They put them headlines together. The number one headline, here's the story. The Senate Friday passed the Trump administration-backed bill that would further enable law enforcement to crack down on fentanyl. They want you to not notice the further enable law enforcement to crack down on fentanyl. Because it's, well, let me just read. In an 84-16 vote, the Senate passed the Halt Fentanyl Act. Halt fentanyl. Who wouldn't want to vote for that? You don't want to halt fentanyl? So anyway, it's the Halt All Lethal Trafficking of Fentanyl Act. Halt fentanyl. Get it? Isn't that cute? The Halt Fentanyl Act would make traffickers of fentanyl analogs, substances that have been altered so as not to technically be fentanyl, but to operate similarly to fentanyl, subject to some new and creative criminal penalties. Because fentanyl's already against the law. 2 years ago, we voted to increase the penalties, and so now we're just all, we got to make something up. It's Halt Fentanyl. Or fentanyl analogs, substances that have been altered so as not to technically be fentanyl, but then operate somewhat similar to fentanyl. So that's the Halt Fentanyl Act, which has nothing to do with halting the fentanyl overdose epidemic. It has nothing to do with that. It has all to do with aggregator headlines, fundraising, polling, and the self-esteem of criminally insane thieves in Washington, if not perverts. And then now the other headline, headline number two. That was the first headline. Senate overwhelmingly passes fentanyl trafficking. Now the second headline, 16 Democrats voted against it. Okay, Democrats inexplicably voted against the Halt Fentanyl Act. What? Democrats don't want to halt fentanyl? Wow, those are bad Democrats. I knew they were bad, but I didn't know they were so bad they didn't want to halt fentanyl. Wow. The reason for their opposition, according to the number two headline, wherever this was, is either blind partisanship or an embrace on soft on crime policies. Those darn Democrats, they're soft on crime. That's their problem. That's why I voted Republican. I'm hat MAGA. And so people read these headlines and they're easily bamboozled and they're easily entertained and they get a shot in the arm from it. They feel better about the fact that to know that someone else is against fentanyl just like they are, and that the people they don't like, they're obviously for fentanyl. So, you know, I'm on the right track. I got it pretty much figured out. I'm against fentanyl. And what they don't realize is that everyone involved in both headlines are soft on crime. And none of this has anything to do with actually stopping people from trafficking deadly drugs on the streets of America. You want to halt fentanyl? How about anyone possessing or distributing enough illegal drugs of any kind to kill someone should be charged with attempted murder? And then, upon conviction, they should be executed publicly and painfully. The fentanyl crisis, along with the entire drug overdose crisis, would virtually end within just 3 months of the first execution. And there wouldn't be many executions after that because everyone would stop. But our governing officials, who occupy positions of authority that are ordained by God, by the way, they either do not know how to or do not want to stop the drug problem. Now, we can give them the benefit of the doubt and assume that they just need guidance. And that's what we're here for. It's the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you, he said, to his extremely attractive audio engineer. Mm-hmm. Okay, and so we go from the hapless efforts to politicize the tragic overdose deaths of tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of Americans by now, to the Joe Biden's green slush fund. Rantingly reports, when Biden announced $27 billion in environmental grants, it turns out he was just stealing the money and shoveling it out the back door to his friends and other communists and other perverts and other thieves. So is that a surprise at all? It's not a surprise. I mean, someone should be arrested. Joe Biden should be arrested. Half the Biden administration should be arrested. But it's really no surprise that that was going on. I mean, we all saw it. Most of the money, $20 billion, $20 billion with a B, went to 8 nonprofits, all of whom had never handled such gargantuan grants. Well, no worries. They weren't going to have to handle them. They were just middlemen. That money was just flat out robbed. In hindsight, it's easy to suspect that corners were cut or laws were broken. Or at the very least, don't even bring up the very least. Come on. What are we, morons? The money was obviously stolen. Laws were obviously broken. These were literally bank robbers busting out the backside of the bank before the cops showed up at the last minute, which is with as much money as they could carry. That's what happened in the Biden administration in the final days. After the unbelievably bad debate performance that Joe had against Trump, everybody knew we got to steal everything we can get our hands on and get out of here because the cops are probably going to show up. Let's see. So what more about the slush fund? The money was put into the greenhouse gas reduction fund. which Democrats pushed through without any Republican support. And so this is one of those few things where the Democrats actually are the guilty party solely. I mean, there's been graft and theft, and the Treasury's been raided for generations by both Republicans and Democrats. But this particularly egregious episode can be laid at the feet of Democrats exclusively. And so we're calling for some arrests, for crying out loud. Oh, listen to this. They say the deal classified the now suspect $20 billion in a novel way, making it hard to track. So, well, that's what thieves do. They try. But we always got to give them the benefit of the doubt. It seems like there could have been some shenanigans going on there. It's not shenanigans. This is larceny. This is felony level criminal theft. All right. Anyway, now Lee Zeldin, he's on the case. He's up at the EPA. Lee Zeldin should be directing bulldozer traffic in front of the EPA. Instead, I guess he has to spend some time trying to track down all the money that was stolen. Good luck with that. Zeldin says these examples are the tip of the iceberg. $20 billion is the tip of the iceberg? My goodness. I mean, if we were all to actually get checks back for the money that's been stolen from us since the time we started working, we should each get a check for like $100,000. There's been so much robbed from us by these perverts. Anyway, he says, tip of the iceberg. We're investigating possible unlawful allocation of taxpayer funds. Really? Possible, Lee? Okay. You don't have to be nice, you know, Lee. You don't have to be nice when you're talking about criminals. You don't have to soften things up. It's not like you're talking about your sister-in-law's dress and it doesn't look right. You don't want to say anything. It's not like that. These guys robbed the Treasury blind for my entire lifetime. You could just say unlawful criminal, shockingly criminal misallocation. We're going to get the bottom of it. We're going to throw them in prison. But no, he says, disturbingly, these cases likely represent only a fraction of broader issues. Likely? Lee. All right. Okay. I mean, that just doesn't sound like a drain the swamp attitude. Okay, but we wish him all the best and God bless him. And I pray for the president every day. Now I've put that on my list. Pray for the president and all of his administration, mostly that they'll just leave me alone. That's the main thing I pray for, because that's what Paul says. Pray for the government that you can live a peaceable life. Pray that they just don't mess you up and just ruin everything for you. Okay, meanwhile, Alan Simpson has died. Alan Simpson was a Republican senator from Wyoming for as long as I could remember. So from the time I was born until I became politically sentient and I went through my whole Republican phase where I thought there were conservatives in politics and I thought that was a way that I could help. And when I was naive and young, Alan Simpson was a fixture in the American political landscape. He died last Friday after struggling to recover from a broken hip. So he broke his hip and it killed him. Okay, now there's a wake-up call for everybody. It's like, are you kidding me that I could die from just breaking my hip? Well, yeah, if you're 90. And he was 93 years old. Tell me God doesn't have mercy on the corrupt and the evil. Now, he was a Republican. Oh, and he had a wit. Oh, he had a sharp wit. He could generate a chuckle. He sure could. And, His brother gets to write his brother gets quoted in the article cited by Breitbart and whoever else, whatever wire service is all set up. So they're all going to line up and talk nice about Senator Alan Simpson, what a great guy he was. So what do? We quote his brother. His brother says he was an uncommonly generous man, especially with other people's money. He was generous in an absolutely unconditional way while giving away the money that was robbed from the American people over the course of his entire career as a leading thief in the government. Well, his brother didn't say all that. His brother said he was uncommonly generous in an unconditional way. I added the part about all the money he stole.
No way.
So, yeah, that was my, yeah. So his brother does say, though, his brother was, Alan was so generous that he would give of his time and of his energy. He did it in politics and he did it in the family. All right. Nowhere did he give anybody any of his money. So Alan died with all of his money. Apparently, he didn't give a lot of, but he gave his time and his energy because his time and his energy led to the accumulation of vast quantities of money. I had to look into how much money did Alan Simpson die with. He's from Wyoming, so it wouldn't be much, and he would think it was a lot because, you know, in Wyoming, it's pretty slim pickings out there. So we'll have to see how much he died with. What else do we have? Simpson was known as a deficit hawk. That's why the Treasury accumulated like $80 trillion in debt over the course of his career. Because he was a deficit hawk. He was known for his bipartisan friendships. He was friends with Robert Reich, a known communist. And he served as President Bill Clinton's... Oh, no, that was Reich who served as... I didn't think he served as Clinton's anything. He wasn't that... Obama. This is what I remember. Obama tapped Alan Simpson in 2010 to co-lead a deficit reduction commission. And they came up with a plan to save $4 trillion. Huh? Yeah, in 2010. That's why we're $80 trillion in debt. Alan Simpson was on the case, being extraordinarily generous in an unconditional way. While the Treasury was being robbed by him and his minions in the Congress. And then, listen to this. Oh, by the way, Alan Simpson was a baby killer. Alan Simpson was one of the first Republicans I remember coming out as a baby killer with no apologies in front of God and everybody. Well, he had some apologies because he played the whole abortion regulation game. Oh, he thought there should be limitations here and there and tweak it here and this, but he was a baby killer. And then in 2022, to top off his baby-killing, hypocritical, thieving career, President Joe Biden awarded Simpson the now plastic banana version of the Presidential Medal of Freedom, which means virtually nothing anymore. And so what could have been more comical than watching a brain-dead Joe Biden try to pin a medal on the cadaverous Alan Simpson in the hours and days before his death that was so richly deserved? Alan Simpson being a sinner. All sinners deserve death. Some sinners deserve a more, unrepentant sinner. Anyway, Alan Simpson, if he repented, I was unaware of it. I think he was despicable, a horrible example to Americans and children especially. Playing like you're a conservative while you're a baby killer is the worst form of low life. At least we know where the froth-at-the-mouth leftists are coming from, and we know what kind of fight we're in. With Alan Simpson, he's robbing you blind, telling you he's a conservative, killing babies, and corrupting the nation and the social fabric of America. Alan Simpson is one of the reasons America is in the shape it's in. He's one of the reasons for the moral free fall and crisis we're in. Because the likes of that vermin was allowed to be called a conservative for most of my adult lifetime. It's just embarrassing. All right. Meanwhile, from the now a message from our sponsors file, the White House has withdrawn the nomination of former Representative Dave Weldon, who Trump had chosen to be the director of the Centers for Disease Control. Aha. So, well, this gives us one clue. RFK is not in charge of the Centers for Disease Control. He's in charge of something else. I think it's HHS, but I'm really not sure. The bureaucracies are thick. It's hard to sort them out sometimes. But former Rep. Weldon, His nomination was withdrawn just before the Senate Health, Education, and Labor and Pensions Committee was to hold a hearing. And so right there, the fact that we have a Health, Education, Labor, and Pension Committee in the Senate, there's no one in the Senate or in the government at all who has any authority over health, education, labor, or pensions. Why are they even allowed to talk about it? And they're gonna confirm a guy who's in charge of the Centers for Disease Control. Okay, well, there, at least the Centers for Disease Control, public health is a legitimate function of, is it a legitimate function of the government? I'm not sure it is. Now, I have to stop and think about that. I could be wrong about that. I have to go back to my Bible, and I'll have to look that up. I think maybe the government isn't really. I think public health maybe. I have to look it up. Well, I can tell you this. The Centers for Disease Control, if the government is authorized in the public health department, the CDC is the worst example of it ever in the history of all mankind. So, but meanwhile, Rep. Weldon, he claims the pharmaceutical industry lobbied against his nomination. And now NBC says that's not true. But NBC's message from our sponsor, their sponsors are Pfizer and Glaxo and all the big drug companies, are the sponsors of NBC News, who say they remind us that this Weldon, this Representative Weldon, he lobbied. He defended the work of Andrew Wakefield. Have you heard of Andrew Wakefield? He's the British physician who published a study that falsely claimed the vaccine for measles, mumps, and rubella causes autism. And so you have to stop right there, because there's the propaganda. So NBC News, they're reporting on a news story, and they say that the nominee defended the work of Andrew Wakefield, who published a study falsely claiming something. So how does NBC News know that this study was a false claim? Do you think any of the authors of this article were qualified to say whether or not the study was? Now, I know the study was retracted. I know the whole story. There's a lot behind all of this. No one at NBC is qualified to say that Andrew Wakefield's study was discredited on any other grounds other than financial, political, all of that. In fact, I hear they're going to try to fund a study to see if these vaccines are related to autism. And I'd like to know, because I think it's totally possible. You know, a good thing can turn bad if you do it too much, too often, too many different ways. So let's find out if we're making a mistake. But to say that Andrew Wakefield's study was false is propaganda from MSNBC, because their sponsors, who pay all their paychecks, said, call this guy, say he's false. Discredit Wakefield, discredit Weldon. Anyway, the authors of the NBC report, all put together, are not qualified to make a judgment about pretty much anything involved in this story, except just report the facts, right? Just report the fact that Weldon's nomination was withdrawn, and then just shut up about everything else. But they don't do that, because they're bought and paid for by the drug companies, which I know I used to think that was a conspiracy theory, but you can't really think that anymore. Watch the news and see how many drug commercials there are. Watch the network news, the CBS Evening News with GlaxoSmithKline Barney. And then the new Sventura drug or whatever it is, and the ad with the stars and the rainbows. Everybody's happy and they're taking the drugs. All right. Meanwhile, from the widespread panic file, we go to the Atlantic Magazine, which is an organ of the left-wing communist cabal, the pile of faggots, perverts, creeps who seized the government in 2020. This is one of their organs officially. And here's the headline. World's deadliest infectious disease is about to get worse. And all of their headlines have a lisp, by the way, just so you know. It's the Atlantic. So they blame Donald Trump by retracting foreign aid via the USAID. Trump could make tuberculosis untreatable. That's right. The coming tuberculosis pandemic, if they can get that one off the ground, that'll be Donald Trump's fault because he dismantled the leftist slush fund at USAID. Why? Because USAID was originally founded to do things like vaccinate poor kids in Africa, dig wells in Somalia. That was how it was sold to us. And it turned into this giant bloated leftist bureaucracy through which the criminal thieves funneled all the money that they stole from us for 50 years. But now the New York Times and the Atlantic want to draw our attention back to its initial. This is all about, dude, can't vaccinate kids against the tuberculosis in Africa. I wonder how long it's been since one AID penny paid for one thing that did anyone in Africa any good at all. Did they move one grain of sand to dig a well? Did they remove the cap on one syringe to deliver a vaccine against tuberculosis? Is there a vaccine against? I don't think there's a vaccine, but there's treatments. Did they give one treatment for tuberculosis, AID, USAID, in the past 25 years? Anyway, I suppose we'll find out. I hope Elon Musk kids can uncover whether or not any of that was still going on. All right. And by the way, the fact that USAID was sold to us, or actually our elected representatives, basically selling them on the idea that the government should be doing a bunch of stuff that the government has no authorization to do. Well, they should have known then. We shouldn't get into this. It'll turn corrupt. The government doesn't belong in the vaccination business. The government doesn't belong in digging wells for poor people in Africa. That's for Christian missionaries to go do. But the government in America hates Christian missionaries and has sought to replace them in every area they could for my entire lifetime. Everything the Christians used to do, the government now promises us they'll do. We'll provide the health and human services. You don't need Jesus. That's the government. And they end up being a corrupt pile of thieves. Can you imagine? Let's see. Oh, because Trump dismantled the AID, USAID, the New York Times says sick patients have seen medication and testing suddenly cut off. And so you can see this African kid coming into and they're smacked. Get out of here. We don't have the money anymore. Get out of here, Ahmed. Go cough and die in a tent. That's Donald Trump cut off our money. That's right. USAID estimated cases of multidrug-resistant tuberculosis will rise by about 30% in the next few years. It's an unprecedented regression in the history of humankind's fight against the disease. And it's all because Donald Trump defunded USAID. And he's killing children in Africa. And New Orleans. And South Dallas. All right. And Nashville. Children are going to die because Donald Trump defunded USAID. All right. Meanwhile, let's see. Do I want to close on this one? That's too. Oh, here we go. Good news. Gen Z is buying more Bibles than ever. That's right. An increase of 87% reported in England between 2009 and 2014. Hey. Now, that sounds like a lot, but if there were only 21 Bibles in 2018 bought, that means there were 42 in 2024. So, hey, but we'll take whatever we can get. And the biggest selling versions, by the way, are the New International Version, also known as the HIV version, along with the Good News Bible Youth Edition with extra explanations to help readers decipher the meaning of important Bible passages. Oh, boy. Well, hey, at least we've got Gen Z's attention, and that's all we need. Any Bible is better than no Bible. But more importantly are the preachers, right? No matter what Bible you have a good preacher, you can figure it out, and that's why we're here. And we'll be back next week should the Lord tarry. We'll return then. May the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.